One of the biggest U.S. antitrust lawsuits against Google is coming to an end. And another Boeing whistleblower has died unexpectedly. Coming up on Business Matters. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining me here today. I'm Don Ma. Okay, starting with Wall Street, U.S. stocks rallied today. This is as investors saw the Federal Reserve stance yesterday as being more, you know, sort of dovish here. So all three major indexes ended in positive territory, with the tech-heavy NASDAQ seeing a boost from chip stocks after Qualcomm reported quarterly sales and profit above analyst expectations. Now, data released today as well included muted jobless claims, a drop in planned layoffs, as well as a surge in quarterly labor costs, and all this amid a sharp deceleration in productivity. So looking at the numbers here, S&P 500 gained 46 points, or 0.9%. The Dow rose 322 points, or 0.85%, and the NASDAQ 235 points, or 1.5%. All right, that's enough on Wall Street. Turning now to our top news. A second Boeing whistleblower has died unexpectedly. Josh Dean was one of the first whistleblowers to allege defects on the 737 MAX. He was in critical condition for 2 weeks after a fast-spreading bacteria infection. So a little bit of background here. Dean is a former quality auditor at Boeing supplier Spirit AeroSystems between 2019 and 2023. He died Tuesday morning at the age of 45. Dean had filed a complaint with the FAA previously and alleging that, quote, serious and gross misconduct by senior quality management of the 737 production line. So he said that Spirit's leadership ignored manufacturing flaws. For example, this is including improperly drilled holes when he raised them. So Spirit fired Dean in April 2023. Dean said that this was in retaliation for raising those safety concerns. Now, Dean's relatives, they said he was in good condition and good health and had a very healthy lifestyle. He was admitted to the hospital after trouble breathing, and his condition worsened rapidly from there onwards. And just a little bit more here. Another whistleblower actually was found dead of a gunshot wound less than 2 months ago before Dean. Also, just so you know, Spirit AeroSystems has asked a U.S. judge to block a probe by the state of Texas, and the state's attorney general wants internal communications about, quote, manufacturing defects in their products. But Spirit says, the demand is, quote, unreasonable and unlawful. All right, let's move on from that. Google's search dominance being questioned here. The Justice Department presenting the final arguments today and tomorrow in a multi-year blockbuster antitrust lawsuit against the big tech firm. So what's happening here is the DOJ trying to convince a federal judge that Google illegally monopolized online search market. Drawing on testimony from a trial last fall, government authorities say that they're saying that Google maintained an illegal monopoly through a web of contracts. So those contracts made Google the default search engine on millions of devices and browsers around the globe. But you know, Google doesn't see it that way. Google says that consumers just chose the search engine because it is the superior product. But counter to that, the DOJ asks, if that's true, then why does Google pay tens of billions of dollars every year to be the default search engine on various devices and software applications? The court is now expected to reach a decision in the case later this year. Novo Nordisk lifted its outlook today yet again. So Novo has become Europe's most valuable listed firm, worth over $570 billion. And this is on the back of its lead in the market for obesity drugs like Wegovy. The company has raised to increase output of its Wegovy treatment. Its income has only been capped by an inability to keep up with surging demand. So analysts are predicting that the market for weight loss drugs could be soon worth $100 billion per year. But Novo itself won't have it to itself. Rival Eli Lilly is also raking in sales for its competing products. And this week, the U.S. firm also raised its outlook and said that its factories were running 24/7 to meet demand. All right, a different story with another drug maker, though, Moderna, which is also reporting earnings today. Its sales, though, have plummeted compared to last year when demand for COVID vaccines was higher. So sales of Spikevax dropped 91% for the quarter, but these results did surpass analysts' expectations. Nevertheless, the shot is Moderna's only marketed product, and the company is set to enter the RSV shot market with Pfizer and GSK. Okay, moving on from those, turning to consumer goods. Pop-Tarts are filling stomachs and profits at the same time for the snack maker Kellanova. So it used to be called Kellogg, and the company beat Wall Street estimates for first quarter sales and profit. Kellanova attributes this to higher prices and demand for breakfast cereals and ready-to-eat snacks. Its diverse portfolio includes graham crackers, Nutri-Grain, and breakfast bars and frozen foods like Morningstar Farms. So the company is saying that prices rose 8.5% in the quarter, and that helped soften the impact of some customers shifting to lower price alternatives. And as well, it drove Kellanova's adjusted gross margin up. Speaking of food inflation, I'm sure you've heard of this term, shrinkflation. You know, this is when you suspect there are fewer potato chips in the bag or fewer Oreos, as a matter of fact, but, you know, it still costs the same. Lawmakers are shining a spotlight on this in a hearing today. NTD's Virginia Gibson has a recap.
Shrinkflation. Companies are using this tactic to make consumers pay more for less. They reduce the amount of product without reducing prices. Researcher Bilal Baydoun told lawmakers Thursday companies use many creative methods.
Lowering the number of paper towels that come in a roll, the number of Kleenex that are in a box. It could be increasing the indentation of a drink. So that it's, so that less liquid could go inside.
Democrat Senator Elizabeth Warren wants to fight shrinkflation with legislation.
Shrinkflation is all about deceiving customers so that corporations can pad their profits. We need to pass Senator Casey's Shrinkflation Prevention Act to end shrinkflation.
Republican Tom Tillis argues otherwise. He says companies should have the freedom to shrink their products.
The internet's doing a pretty good job of identifying when potato chip bags are getting smaller. I, for one, am very cheap. So I'll go find a brand that I like that hadn't skimped on me.
He says to let the free market solve the problem by itself. Besides those who agree and disagree with each other, some are saying shrinkflation discussions are unproductive. Senator Bill Hagerty says it doesn't tackle the real problem.
The cause of inflation in America right now over the past 3.5 years has to do with policies that have been implemented by the Biden administration and by Democrat legislation that was passed without a single Republican vote.
Hagerty says Biden's COVID policies, the American Rescue Plan, the Inflation Reduction Act, all injected trillions into the economy, raising demand while constraining supply, causing prices to rise and products to shrink. Virginia Gibson, NTD News.
Now, on the topic of discussing President Biden, by the way, he today just addressed the college campus protests and encampments for the first time, about 2 weeks after the protests started. So what's happening here is he said that peaceful protests is protected here in America, but not violent ones. Neither are protests that are shutting down campuses and forcing the cancellation of classes and graduations. He also said there's no place in America for anti-Semitism or Islamophobia, and that he's committed to defending free speech and the rule of law. You know, here at Business Matters, we really try to delve deeper into issues that really do matter. So we ask ourselves this question: who are funding the organizations that's putting together these protests? To get some answers, I talked to Professor Gerald Steinberg. He's the president at the watchdog group NGO Monitor. Here's what he said. Professor Steinberg, thank you very much for your time here today. So to start off, I wanted to have some background for us and the viewer watching as well. Can you tell us a little bit about what is it that you do and what is NGO Monitor?
So what NGO Monitor does, particularly when it comes to, we're based in Israel, so when it comes to the Middle East, is we examine, are these organizations, whether it's Human Rights Watch, whether it's Students for Justice for Palestine or Amnesty International, what do they do with all their money? And in this case, what we've been looking at is all these campus riots, protests, mobs that we see all over the United States, who's giving them money?
The main thing I wanted to talk to you about today is these anti-Semitic protests around university campuses. So your organization, NGO Monitor, says that these are actually organized movements. How do we know that?
Well, first of all, we've been tracking the same organizations for, in some cases, over 10 years, particularly Students for Justice for Palestine, SJP. They're the most visible organization. They have four or five partner groups. Together, they have a lot of money. Now, one of the problems with SJP in particular, but also their fig leaf of a Jewish organization, Jewish Voice for Peace, which is described as neither Jewish nor for peace, U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, there are all sorts of other names, Semidun, that they do not file detailed financial reports which tell us who their donors are, and in many cases, what their overall budget is. Students for Justice for Palestine has dozens of chapters on university campuses. They're the ones you see at Columbia and various other universities shutting down, preventing Jews from going to classes, harassing and intimidating, and in some cases being violent. Well, there's very little knowledge about where they get their money from, who do they pay, what are the salaries, all those basic information which would exist if they weren't defined as an NGO. And I think that's very important. Where do they get their money? How do they use it? Is it legitimate? Are they getting money from Qatar? Are they getting money from foreign governments? We don't know because it's all secret and hidden. And I think that's very important to bring to the surface.
I mean, if you were to, you know, take an educated guess, if you will, I mean, what are the some of the very likely candidates that where this funding is coming from?
We know a little bit about the money. For instance, we know the Rockefeller Brothers Fund has this thing called a peace program or platform, which ostensibly is supposed to promote Middle East peace. And we know that they've given money to a lot of these organizations, but perhaps that accounts for a quarter to a third. There's a group called Westpac, that radical funding organization that exists in Westchester County up in the New York State area. But that only accounts for small amounts here. So we have to guess as to where the rest of the money comes from. One of the obvious sources would be foreign governments like Qatar. They've been given billions overall to universities for all sorts of Middle East studies programs and other things which have been fomenting hate and propaganda. Are they also involved in funding these groups? Well, unless these groups come forward and provide this information, unless they register with the, for instance, with the IRS as nonprofits and provide those documents, we can only guess.
Well, Professor, very well said. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Good. Thank you for inviting me.
Let's just take a quick break here. Blacklisted Chinese companies are getting billions of dollars from U.S. asset managers, according to a new report. And artificial intelligence apps that are designed to turn regular images of people into fake revealing ones. We have all that and more after the break. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Some rapid-fire headlines for you to keep you as up-to-date as possible today. A steady, low number of Americans filed with new unemployment benefits last week. This points to a fairly tight labor market still. And initial claims were unchanged at seasonably adjusted 208,000. The OECD upgrading its outlook for the global economy. The new report acknowledges that the economy is still suffering from high interest rates and a tight labor market, but it notes that inflation has declined within sight of global central bank targets. And U.S. worker productivity growth slowed sharply in the first quarter. Meanwhile, unit labor costs jumped to a rate of nearly 5%. And that is the price of labor for a single unit of output. Now, A new report is detailing how billions of dollars are being funneled into firms with ties to the Chinese regime. And these are companies including such as those that have been sanctioned by the federal government over human rights abuses. To break it down for us, I spoke to Nick Iacovella, who is with the Coalition for a Prosperous America. And this is the organization that produced the report. Take a look. All right, Nick, good to see you again. Thank you for coming back on the show. So I wanted to ask you about your organization's new report. So apparently, U.S. asset managers funneling billions of dollars into these Chinese companies. So the immediate question, of course, is what kind of companies are these?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and it gets right at to the heart of why people should be concerned about this. These are Chinese Communist Party companies that have been sanctioned by the U.S. government for human rights abuses, for aid in the genocide that's going on in Xinjiang against the Uyghurs and other religious ethnic minorities, and for companies that are Chinese military companies that are helping to modernize the People's Liberation Army. So very problematic companies.
And can you just lay it out for us? I mean, I think we all have a general sense as to why we shouldn't be doing this, but can you just pinpoint specific reasons why this is a concern?
Yeah, so what we're seeing is that Wall Street is actually funneling U.S. capital, investor capital, to Chinese Communist Party companies that are geared towards the CCP's efforts to undermine U.S. and economic national security. And that's problematic for a number of reasons. The first is that in some cases, many times Americans are unwitting investors in these companies. They buy an MSCI index product, a mutual fund, and they have no idea that their retirement capital, their investment capital, is going towards America's number one geopolitical and military rival. If in the case of certain government retirement funds and the thrift savings plan, which we've worked on, there are index funds within the government retirement programs that every single federal employee has to take part in. So that includes all federal staff and members of our military. So in certain cases, there's actually members of our military that are investing in companies that are designing weapons to kill them on the battlefield. You can see why that would be incredibly concerning for our military servicemen and women. We've talked with generals about this. We've talked with the folks that are in charge of our commands and in the region where China operates. They're very, very concerned about this. And it really is just more mounting evidence of why Congress needs to act to close this loophole. You know, BlackRock and Vanguard, they've replied to us and said, well, we're not doing anything illegal. And our response is just because something is not illegal doesn't mean that it's right. And hopefully members of Congress are waking up that our capital markets are being weaponized against us with the help of Wall Street to further the CCP, and they should put an end to that immediately.
I mean, the concerns here you laid out for us, it sounds extremely worrying. So I'm wondering, why are these U.S. companies, these asset managers, why are they doing this? What do they get out of this?
Yeah, it's a great question, and the simple word is profit. They are pursuing profit over the interests of the United States, and that's the argument that we've made to members of Congress. And I can tell you it's one that's resonated very strongly. We recently saw in March members of Congress, a Republican and a Democrat, come together to introduce a bipartisan legislative package, four separate bills. From Congressman Brad Sherman and Congresswoman Victoria Spartz. And so that legislative package had four bills that are aimed directly at these asset managers and how they are profiting in China by helping to funnel U.S. capital to these very, very problematic companies. And so we've seen other efforts as well in the Senate, in the House. And I think the longer that we continue to see this evidence mount, you know, in terms of BlackRock and Vanguard and what they're doing, Congress is likely to act to close this loophole.
All right. Well, it's a very important issue to be discussing, and I thank you very much for sharing your insight today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
we're seeing a new type of sexual abuse. So this is from AI programs being used to generate fake explicit images of teens. NTD's Shar Marshall has more.
A new type of sex crime is affecting school children across the country. AI programs are being used to produce fake intimate images of classmates, a new form of technology-related bullying. These apps are designed to turn regular images of people into fake revealing ones, or the apps can put people's faces onto nude AI-generated bodies.
There is this issue of mental health, you know, there is anxiety about now, you know, putting your picture out there in a certain way. There is anxiety that, you know, something could just pop up all of a sudden and, you know, you're being laughed at and you don't really know why.
Boys used an app to alter photos of girls who attended last fall's homecoming dance. This was at Issaquah High School in Washington State. And at Westfield High School in New Jersey, 10th grade male students created fake revealing images of some of their female classmates and shared them around school. Some worry that this technology-related sexual harassment behavior from minors won't come with heavy enough focus from law enforcement.
If tech companies are not going to take responsibility and fix this, I think the legislation and law has to kind of catch up to that. So they're going to have to either punitively punish someone and show that this is not acceptable. And I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if it's going to mean a teen has to do, you know, jail time, or if their parents are responsible and have to pay out a fee or have to go themselves to jail.
Deepfakes are just one area in the complicated realm of AI that lawmakers are trying to figure out whether and how to handle. At least 10 states have enacted deepfake-related laws already. Shar Marshall, NTD News.
And finally, according to LendingTree, savers with high-yield savings account made four times in 2023 compared to the year before. A high-yield savings account is the best place to put your money away for emergencies. The average on high-yield savings accounts is well over 4%, and the very best rates between 5 and 5.5% can be had at FDIC-insured online banks. And that's all the stories we have for you today. Thank you very much for watching. And as I always say, business matters. See you tomorrow.